Okay, off you go.
All right, so, well, fast forward a few years, I guess. But I was staying in Dharmasara, I was one of the bhikkhunis there. I ordained in Burma in 2006 and had many golden years, just as Ajahn Brahm talks about, but unfortunately my poor tummy was already really exhausted from the strain of living in India and practicing there. So I was very kind of hardcore, you know, just meditating all the time and drinking all the local water and got sick. But fortunately, while I was in Burma, I came across Ajahn Brahm's teachings. And to be quite honest, maybe I shouldn't put this on tape, but this is the honest truth. I didn't have a lot of faith in Western monks because I'd been in Asia and known my Buddhism there. So I felt like, oh, are they really the real thing? You know, they might talk about daily lives, they might talk about, you know, how to cultivate a happy mind, or about the real stuff, jhanas and enlightenment and, you know, getting out of samsara. But one day, I just decided, okay, I've got this CD that somebody at Amaravati gave me, actually, who I'll always be grateful to. His name is Teja. Venerable Teja, you might know him. From Gujarat, I think. And so I put it on and I thought, give it a go. And this monk came on and said, well, normally I like to talk about jhanas and enlightenment, but today we'll talk about meditation off the cushion. I was like, huh? He talked about that? And within a couple of talks, I was sure that this was the real thing, and all this PT and kind of deep confidence arose in me. And this was exactly the same time that I was getting very sick, so I couldn't really stay in Burma any longer, and I wasn't sure what to do. So sometimes, you know, you come to a closed door, and another door suddenly opens. But I had really no idea what I was doing a couple of months later when I just decided to chance it and leave Burma and find this teacher. And so it took a couple of years. I was in Europe as an itinerant nun, as many nuns are, you know, because there simply aren't enough places for us. I went to Amaravati. We already knew each other. We have a long connection, so we met again. But it just didn't feel like that was where I wanted to stay. So finally, I heard about, you know, the chance to go to Perth. And I remember meeting Ajahn Brahm about, I mean, first of all, 2010, and then again in 2011. And at that time, he told me about the bhikkhunis practicing there, and I was so inspired. And it was just obvious to me that, like, if given the chance, of course you'd take the full ordination. Because I think for most nuns, when we ordain, it's not a half-hearted thing. We don't say, okay, well, I'll just ordain half, and maybe later, you know, we'll see. It's a full thing, you know, it's a huge step, and it comes after many years of practice and dedication quite normally. So, you know, it's just obvious to me that I'd already given my life to the Dhamma. So, of course, if there was a chance to take full ordination, I'd jump at it. At that time, I didn't think there was any possibility. So hearing this was just wonderful. So finally, I found my way to Perth and eventually got a place at Dhammasara Monastery in the forest. And yet my father was quite sick at the time, and I just felt like somehow I need to move forward in a way that I can serve more. You know, I'd had a lot of practice opportunity already in Asia, and I really wanted to be able to give. And also through the feeling of really deep gratitude to Ajahn Brahm and everything he sacrificed to give the ordination. And probably a good bit of brainwashing too, yeah. Which he might admit. Well, he probably would admit. So one day we sort of came up with this crazy idea to perhaps start something in England. And it was actually a bit of a joke for me, I was only sort of kidding. But I went back to Ajahn Brahm and said, you know, were you serious about that? And he said, yes. You know, why not go over and give it a try? Just see. So the whole Anukampa project happened really in a rather strange way, kind of the other way around from most projects, because normally there's a trust already established who want to, you know, invite bhikkhunis or invite monks usually. And then the bhikkhunis come across, or the bhikkhus come across, or nuns come across. And then they begin from there. But in this case, I came across first without any other lay people. I hardly knew anybody because I left England when I was 18, so I hardly knew anybody here. My best friend, who's I think she'd consider herself a Buddhist, and who else? One other person who was involved in the BSWA. And I remember asking him, and I said, you know, what do you think about that idea? And he said, are you kidding? I've been waiting for this for years. So he was our first website manager. So that's what we've got things started. But anyway, I was still set to go back to Perth. I had a return ticket back to my community in Perth. But then I said to Ajahn Brahm on the phone, like, what do you think? I mean, there does seem to be some interest here. But I wouldn't be able to do it unless you were like our spiritual advisor or something. And I thought, fat chance of that, because he usually says no. But he said, yeah, sure. I was like, huh? And then I said, but you know, it wouldn't work unless you came over to teach. So what do you think? Would you come over to teach? Yeah, why not? So then I was like, oh my God. The master's coming and I've got to figure out something so that he can teach. So suddenly I realised, I spoke with my abbot back in Perth at Dhammasara, and she said, well, I don't know how you can organise it if you're over here, you know, you probably need to stay in England. And I remember having a few nights of, like, you know, your stomach sort of churned up and you think, oh my goodness, this is crazy, completely crazy, because I had nowhere to stay in England, you know. But for some reason I couldn't get in contact with Ajahn Brown to kind of double check it. You were in Indonesia, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I had to make my decision. So I cancelled my flight back to Perth, and that was that. Visa finished, everything. My visa was in the process to be extended in Australia, but I put that aside. And basically, we've just taken it from there. So the first year, we had to, you know, organise the tour. And of course, that involved having some kind of charity so that we could have funds coming in and we could have a website and all of this. And it was just extraordinary to see, I mean, with a bit of effort and networking, but people would just pop up at the right time and help us. So we had our first volunteer was called Amina, who some of you know and remember, and she helped us a lot to organise that tour, because I had no technical skills for things like online bookings and all that stuff. So she helped with that, and then bit by bit more and more people came on. So that was 2016, and you came here for the first time. And in a similar way, actually, not sure I should say this, but we do have some funds in the bank, and the way it happened, we started with 10 quid. I still remember the first donation, 10 quid. I was like, wow, somebody gave us 10 quid. This is so cool. We've got money in the bank. But then after the first tour, we reached about 1,000 people, I think, with the events and the little day retreats and weekend retreats at Mary Ward Hall. And then about, I don't know, a couple of weeks after that, Ajahn Brown went home to Perth, and he wrote me an email, and it said, dear Venerable, please sit down before reading this. So I sat down, and then I read the email, and it said, it was copy-pasted from somebody, and it said, I have just deposited £400,000 to the Anukampa bank account. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. Signed, Anonymous. And I was like, oh, okay. So now it's not just let's see how it goes, you know, let's see if there's any interest, but it's a responsibility because somebody obviously really wants this. So this was the first kind of chunk when I realised, okay, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of, you know, putting all the other pieces together and waiting for them to bear fruit. So that was the first year, and then our trust sort of got quite enthusiastic and we applied for charitable registration. So we put that in after many months working on it, and we got registered as a educational and religious charity within a month to the date. That was 2017. So since then we've carried on really, and last January, is that right? Or this January, we got our first little temporary place in Oxford. Because I'm still alone as the only non, and I don't have like long-term lay support. So some people are sometimes surprised, because as a bhikkhuni you can't handle them as a non. There's 10 or 150 precepts. We can't handle money or cook for ourselves or drive or any of that. So I'm still alone in that little residence, and the way that it's working is by having guests coming to stay. So guests come and they participate in the daily program, they do some cooking, they take care of the place. And yeah, I do some teaching here and there and everywhere. Not as much as Ajahn Brown, thank goodness. But slowly we're building things up, and there's many, many ways to be involved. So I was curious, because I know there's a few people in here who've come and stay with me. Some of them have left already, but how many people in here have come and visited the little vihara? Yeah. So you've all come and offered food or seen the place and stayed. So it's starting to be a little community, and the beautiful thing at this stage is that you're not only relating to me, but there's friendships happening within the group. And I think this is the whole purpose of having a monastery. It's about spiritual friendship. You know, it's not about just having walls or a nice flashy building. It's about what happens in that, and it's about that support that we can give each other in our practice. Because without spiritual friendship, as you've learned here, you know, we're conditioned beings, entirely conditioned. So you need that positive input of like-minded people to keep you on the right track, and to be able to talk to you about difficulties in practice or joys in practice, and somebody who understands, you know, and maybe, yeah, is interested in similar teachings. Because I think in our constitution we have set this up to spread the teachings of early Buddhism. So it's slightly different from Thai Buddhism or Burmese Buddhism or even Theravada Buddhism. It's going back to the suttas, you know, and it's basing our understanding of practice on the Buddha's words. So this is really rare. I think it's quite new actually in England. And I guess one advantage of the Bhikkhuni Sangha now is that we don't have the baggage of cultural overlay. It can be a disadvantage too, in that we don't have obvious lineage of female mentors. You know, when there are the enlightened bhikkhunis, there aren't, maybe there are some, but it's very hard to, most of us don't have female teachers, you know? So we're kind of learning it as we go, and depending to some extent on senior monks as well, and on our friendships with each other. So, but yeah, on the positive side, we don't have the baggage either, and I think it's very exciting. I visited a number of monasteries in California. There's about 5 bhikkhuni monasteries, and each one has its own particular flavour, which is really refreshing. Because when I went there, I thought, well, why don't they all live together, you know? Is there some kind of interpersonal issues? Or, but often it's just the training background and the interpretation or approach to the Dhamma that differs. And it's very beautiful when you have a choice. You know, in the Bhikkhu Sangha, people have a lot of choice. And there's so many monasteries, I think, in this country, at least 5 in the Wat Pa Pong tradition, at least, and many others, you know, even in Oxford there's a little monks' monastery from Burma. And so we need the same thing for nuns, and then to have, you know, eventually when we have more places, to have a kind of cross-fertilisation, going to visit each other and learn from each other. So it's just the beginning, but there's a lot of scope with a new project also to be involved and to be part of shaping it. So it's not something that's already like very solidified in my mind. It's quite open. The basic guidance comes from the early Buddhist teachings and from Ajahn Brahm as my teacher. That's very clear for me that I'm aligned to that sort of way of practice, because it's helped me so much. It's really transformed my practice, especially the added ingredient of kindness and letting go and learning that this is all a process. It's not to do with a self doing it, willing it. So this is very special, I think, and quite different from other ways of teaching. And so, yeah, there's a lot of scope to be involved and to be part of developing this and see where it goes. So at the moment we're in Oxford, and we'll stay there probably because it's so accessible and I can easily get around. But when I have more people, you know, say lay people coming to look after me and stay longer term, or people who want to ordain, we can think about moving further afield into rural areas, hopefully somewhere in the forest, somewhere tranquil, secluded, peaceful, and yet not too far that people can't come. So, yeah. So you're all very, very welcome to be involved. You can be involved as a volunteer, either by coming to stay or by doing some kind of admin help or website help, writing articles, doing outreach. You know, there's so many different ways, and really creativity and innovation is encouraged, because my poor head can't come up with new ideas every day. So this is one way. And just coming to the events, volunteering at the events, and contacting us, you know, to find out what's needed. You can offer food, either again by coming in person or by sending food. We have such a thing as a postal service where you can order stuff like basic porridge, yeah, whatever. So you can go on the website and have a look. And and so that's a kind of basic overview of where we're at. But I'd really like to hear from other people as to what they're interested in, if they have any ideas, if they have any feedback, maybe what this means or doesn't mean, or any questions at all about it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't understand. Did you say that you're the only bhikkhuni here in the UK?
Yes,
and
the only bhikkhuni.
Is it only for this tradition, or is it for all of the Buddhists?
Good point, yeah. I'm not sure actually if there are any bhikkhunis in the Mahayana tradition here, but maybe.
There is Lama Zangmo.
Okay. Mm. Ah, she's a bhikkhuni, okay, yeah. Yeah.
Well, she's a Gelongma.
Right, okay.
I don't know how
she is. Yeah, I don't know either actually. I think there's a difference. She may be both.
What's the difference between a nun and the ordained bhikkhuni like you?
A fully ordained bhikkhuni takes more precepts, basically. But the implication of that in the long run is that we are qualified after 12 years to ordain other nuns. And I think this is a huge difference because we're able to actually develop our own sanghas independent of the monks. Whereas if you only have a partial ordination, you're not a full sangha member, you can't actually do those ordinations. So it limits the development of the nuns' communities and it keeps them very dependent on the monk sangha.
Why
That's
are there
one
more
thing.
Monks than nuns or bhikkhunis?
Sorry?
Why are there more monks than nuns?
Well, I mean, basically, the story is that after about 1,000 years after the Buddha, the bhikkhuni sangha sort of died out or greatly reduced. Whether this is really true or not, I don't know. I believe it was always preserved in the Mahayana tradition. But then there was some misunderstanding, I guess, amongst more conservative aspects or elements of the Theravada tradition, which said, well, if the bhikkhunis have died out in our tradition, we can't reinstate them without a Buddha. We'd have to wait for a future Buddha. But then through a lot of research and scholasticism, we discovered that actually the Mahayana nuns and the Theravada nuns share almost the same vinaya. So you can actually be ordained by a Mahayana nun and practice within the Theravada tradition because the vinaya is really very similar, almost identical. So part of it may be that there's been, you know, some conservative elements of the Theravada tradition which haven't wanted to see the revival of bhikkhuni ordination.
There seems to be a lot of hierarchy in the
Well, we're working against that. I mean, this is, you know, it's that rather like the can, what is it? Rather like put on the electric light and complain about the darkness.
Yes.
So yes, that's true, and that's why it's difficult in the beginning, but there's a need for it, you know. And rather than worry about it and say, oh dear, it's not fair, it's not right, you know, that just makes us even more the victim. It's much better to try and change things, and that's what Ajahn Brahm bravely tried to do, along with other monks and nuns, you know. So it will change, and I think the way that women develop communities will be quite different. Even Ajahn Brahm, we were talking the other day, and I think if you started from scratch now, it may be less hierarchical, it may be less Thai, you know, it would be different. Because society changes and we have to be, you know, aligned to that to some degree. So I think, you know, that's what I said about us not having the same cultural baggage. One of the things in our mission statement is to make the teachings accessible and relevant. And that's what I've seen in California. I was really impressed with the nuns there because they all do have their own take on it. Each place has its own flavour. So who knows how it all goes.
I'd love to have
that. Great. That's awesome. What's your name?
Lotus.
Lotus, wow. That's a beautiful name. Okay, I'll look out for your email. Any more questions or wishes to be involved? Remember, it's only through developing this that Ajahn Brahm's going to keep coming to England. Because that's the only reason he's coming.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
I really enjoy your retreats as well. So are you planning on doing more next year, in the next 10 months?
I'm doing quite a few this year, but there's one in Sheffield that might not be full. There's one in the barn, but that's very small. It's only 11 people, so that's full.
Are you doing the one in January, I
think? I'm doing one at London Insight, maybe February, and then Bristol Insight in March. They're just day retreats.
And not longer ones?
Well, the one in Devon is 7 days, but yeah, that's full already. Yeah, and the Sheffield one's 3 days. Yeah.
There's one of the efforts that Sheffield had first.
Yes.
Thank you. How can one support? I'm not from England.
Yes.
But I would like to support and help.
Great.
What would it be there?
A lot of stuff is online, so stuff around admin, events, organisation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to be a little bit. We can't keep taking more and more people because sometimes that becomes more people to manage. But there are different ways to be involved. I mean, if you write to us with, you know, an outline of how you might like to help or the kind of skills that you have, how much time you have, that's a good start. Like I said, there's other ways to be involved, such as coming to stay, or even offering food from abroad. It can be done. You can, you know, phone up a restaurant or what do you call it, Uber Eats in Oxford, and have food delivered. So this is really important, because if I'm not fed, I can't continue to do this. You know, so it's Tommy first. Everything else comes from that. So we have like little charts on the website sharing the dana. Dana means like the offering, whether it was an offering on a particular day. So if you go there and you see like a huge gap, then you can worry about me and please organise something. Yeah. And also talk to people after this. Like, can everybody who's involved with us on a longer term basis put their hand up so that other people can see? So there's Sue, David, Jake. Touch and found mine, all we need to talk to. Amalsha. What's your name?
Karuna.
Karuna, yes, you've offered to volunteer a few times. And Leah and Malika. You're our new bookkeeper, aren't you?
Yay! Yeah.
Tehani is one of our trustees at the back. There's Vishani here, another trustee. And Tamali is on the admin. Annika's come and stayed a few times and helped with tickets and stuff. Francis has come and supported me on personal retreats. So, yeah. And Shirley has come and looked after me for a whole week, which was very lovely. So yeah, and Sue's always coming now. Yeah. Can't get rid of her. Don't want to either.
It's just also simple things like donations, because they do have
donations
to come through. That's a boring thing to say.
Go on. I can't say that.
It's a boring thing to say about money in the bank. But the more funds are in the bank, the more chance there is of getting a bigger place at the right time, the right place, so that we can afford to having just an adequate place for everybody to come and visit and stay when they need to.
Yeah.
But not too big that poor old Ayatanda ends up to be the teacher, the maid, the the caretaker, then the cook and the events and everything. So we've got to work to our strengths. So she's a good teacher, so let her do more teaching, and so that you can do more sort of the organising. I think that's working to our strengths. So that will also help. And then all those donations, the gift aid thing, yeah. So
gift aid, if it's the UK.
UK, yeah. Yeah. So what that does, that allows the government to make some good karma. And my goodness, they need that desperately.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, we have an amount of donations, but it's not enough to get a big-ish place. I suppose what we'd be looking at is a house of maybe 6 bedrooms and land, so that each nun can have a room and maybe an outbuilding for guests as well, or they can have rooms inside. And then we want land so that we can have like kutis. So a really important part of the practice is that, you know, you engage with the community and you give something back to the lay supporters by teaching, by sharing the meal. But then in the afternoon, traditionally monastics go to a quiet place, to a secluded place, and seek solitude. So it's really lovely to have that opportunity to leave the main area and just to go into the nature. Yeah. So that's what we'd really like to have. And it's for men and women, women and men, I should say. So, and non-binary, and everybody's very welcome. You know, it doesn't matter what sexual orientation, what race, religion, even religion. Because I think, I was never really interested in Buddhism, I was always interested in Dhamma. You know, and even now, I'd rather say I'm a devotee of the Buddha than a Buddhist. It's just sometimes complicated to explain that when you're wearing this. Yeah. Oh sure, as soon as there is one who wants to come.
Is it that simple?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there'll be a procedure like there is in most monasteries. So at the moment, guests usually come and stay for 7 days at first, when I don't know them very well. But last year I had a couple of people coming from overseas who I'd met in Perth and who are known to the wider community, and they came for a month. And then, yeah, so you stay a shorter time first of all, because it's not just me checking you out, it's you finding out whether you're comfortable and you like the place and, you know, you enjoy your stay, right? And it's a good place to practice. So then they'll have a little bit of a longer stay, and then maybe 3 months as a lay person, and then bit by bit they'll have the chance to take the anagogic ordination when we're ready and when we have the space.
So it's not Oxford, is it, the next phase?
Well, it could be Oxford. I mean, it could be. Because as an anagogic, you can still do the cooking and that kind of stuff. Yeah, could be. But I can see that if we had one anagogic, we'd quickly need a bigger place so that we can still have guests. But, you know, we can do that. We have funds to be able to do that, at least to rent something bigger for now. So, yeah.
Gentleman wanted to ask.
Yes.
Oh, well, it's kind of already been answered for my question. I just wanted to ask about to what extent can men get involved, both in terms of, well, I think helping has already been made clear,
yeah,
but also coming on retreats and things like that.
I mean, most of my retreats aren't at the Vihara because it's too small. It's just a 4-bedroom terrace house, so it's quite little. But we have like evening meditation, and we have like a sutta class once a week, depending on like how many people are there. Like, if nobody comes, I don't sit there and give a sutta class.
Yeah.
But so men can be involved, absolutely. And at times you can stay over as well. It just depends on the other people in the house and the space available.
Mm.
In the long run, I mean, hopefully we have separate space for men. But you know, again, it depends on how quickly and how this develops. So we have a few men involved, like Jake and David, and Derek as well has just become involved. He's not here, but he's on the admin team. So, yeah, as much as possible we accommodate everybody. But it has to be said that, you know, women have very few places to go, so we're going to prioritise women. You know, if, like, a couple of guest monks wanted to stay and there's only, like, one room and there's a nun, then I'm going to, you know, let the nun come. So it's important we have our spaces. Yeah. Yes?
Are your retreats silent retreats?
Yeah, pretty much. Depending on the people who come.
We have central
meetings. Yes. But we don't have retreats at the Vihara, as I was saying. It's a little bit too small. But if you come, you're kind of more involved in a daily life situation. It's actually very quiet because it's a small place and there's only me to look after it, so there's not a lot to do. And I think that's the beauty of monastic life as opposed to just being in retreat centres where you're focusing on meditation. You know, usually the mindfulness aspect, so it's one part of the Eightfold Path. But if you come to a monastery, you actually have the chance to practice 8 aspects of the Noble Path. Yeah? Because you're applying your practice directly in relationship to others in the community. So I think this is a very integrated way to develop. Yeah. Especially nice after you maybe have done a retreat in the retreat centre and you want that kind of stepping stone. You don't want to just go back to the outside world where it's harder to practice. So that's the time you can come to a monastery.
Well, I was just going to say, it's not a question, but
yes.
I booked onto your retreat at the barn, but it was full up, and so I was on a waiting list.
Yes.
And when I got here, I decided that I'd turn my phone off, you know, and say, that's it, I'm putting it down, I need to let that go for a while.
Yes.
This afternoon, I turned it on.
Yes.
And there was an email from Sharpen saying a cancellation
has
come out, and you know, would you still like to come? And I went, wow! And the next one I think was, you haven't replied to our email, so we're giving it to somebody else.
Oh,
so,
too bad.
I know. It's like, ooh, and then, oh.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'll give you my place.
Maybe there'll be another one.
Well, one of the things I was thinking, actually, because this is the first time I've done a 7-day, I mean, look, people might say, oh, yeah, you give a nice talk. I'm still a beginner, really, and I still don't have the confidence to, you know, just say, right, I'm going to start doing 7-day retreats here, 7-day retreats there. You know, I haven't had that sort of, like...
Well, that's another reason why I'd like to be there.
Yeah,
but,
to support,
you know,
as
maybe,
well.
Maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't.
Well,
so,
yeah.
Right.
What I would like to start asking, if this one goes well, is maybe organise one ourselves.
Mm.
So that's something that volunteers would definitely be needed for, because I don't really want to be organising my own retreat.
I know a place.
Mine's
for
the house.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What place?
We'll tell you later.
Yeah. So this kind of thing is always good, right? If anybody has an idea of a venue, if anybody wants to organise a retreat, or even just a day where we meet together, like a kind of networking day, you know, where some of us can all meet again, because after this you all go your own way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a few of us might meet again, but very rarely that we get all together, actually. One idea we had at the volunteer meeting at the beginning of Ajahn's tour was to do something for the Vaisak. But I've never done a Vaisak, so I don't really know how it works. It could be just a meditation day, or it could be a shared lunch, some discussion, whatever. And to do that in Oxford, so for that we'd have to hire something. So all these kind of things, you know, if people come forward with the idea and say, I'll organise it, then more can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think we would look for organising our own retreats in the end. Because when you do retreats at places like the barn, you're essentially teaching for them.
Sure.
And it's not so much about...
You've got some ideas. We'll be in touch.
Cool. And I'm coming to see you in Seaford.
Fantastic.
Because Tess and Michael and her husband, they're sort of saying, why don't you come down to Seaford? Check that place out. So at the moment, it's so flexible. We could rent anywhere, you know.
Yeah. I'm from Brighton.
Yeah, you're from Brighton, yes. Yeah.
Coming, aren't you? Coming soon, Miss Brighton.
Am I?
I thought you were booked in. You're not booked in for...
They haven't asked me for Brighton yet.
Cool.
Alright, cool. So you can see this is how it happens, right? That's why we wanted a bit of discussion at the end. Yeah. Yes, Angela.
Sorry, you already said actually, that was my suggestion actually. Can you not have a get together regularly, like once a month or once a month, see how things get on?
We actually try, but it ends up me sort of writing to everybody and saying how many people would like to come, and then Tamali's helping me, and it's a lot of emails and people, yeah, I can come, no, I can't come. And in the end, usually we have about five people, and it takes a lot to get them together because people are so busy. But yeah, maybe if we could, I don't know, find something closer to more people, or other people could organise it and say, you know, we've got this space for you, come down, and then, yeah, help us advertise. That could work. Yeah. We did try to do that, actually. We managed two last year, two volunteer meetings. Yes.
Couldn't you just have like a monthly Zoom call online for maybe people you and then that way if people have ideas they can just share it with you, like, and that's not too much to administer, so anyone who wants to join.
Right, well, how many people can come on one of those?
I think if it's online, so wherever you are in the country, or even if you're in another country, if someone has an idea, you can just have like a continuous discussion, and then if you were to put that on your, say, website, you're going to have a Zoom call at this time, click on this link if you want to join.
I think it's a question of balance, you know, because we don't want to outreach further than we actually have the resources to outreach. I mean, at the moment it really is a matter of, is anyone coming to feed me tomorrow? You know, is anybody booked in, like, for the next few months? One thing I did want to say, that many of you came last year and we had a continuous flow of guests, but this year nobody's booked. So I really want to encourage you to just continue your support, you know, because I know that in the beginning things are exciting and you're like, okay, what's all this about? You know, oh, I spent a week at the monastery, it was really nice, but we need you to come again. Like, don't stop at this stage, you know, because we still need to see, is this viable or not? So people need to come and stay. So, I mean, I have a lot of conference calls every month, so I just don't want to, like, commit to things like that, which are so frequent and involve so many people, because it's just a lot of energy. But if other people want to do that, go for it, you know, and then just come up with a couple of ideas and relay that to me. Yeah.
What's December and January looking like then?
December I'm quite busy. There's a bit of space. Yeah.
And then
January I'm on retreat.
Oh, you're on retreat.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Because I thought that you were, I knew you were away.
Yes, I was away for 3 months.
Back and you were busy.
Yeah.
To see you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I kind of feel like I don't want
to
pester you
because I'm not. Oh, no, it's not. Well, you don't write to me, you write to the team.
Yeah.
This is the thing, because a lot of you know me personally now and have my email address, so you're worried about writing to me and you know, choking up my account. But you write to the team and you just ask them, okay, can I have the code to the application form, fill it in and apply. Give some different dates or say any week in the next 2 months and we'll fit you in. Yeah. Yes,
Hannah.
Of course I'll have you, but you have to apply.
Yes.
Because I can't remember and go out and sort of say, come. So you have to apply. Yes. Express your interest. Yes.
It would be helpful if you could write down what the priority of your need in order to develop.
Yeah. We do that kind of thing in the newsletters, you know.
bit by bit as it comes to me. Yeah. Are you on our newsletter list?
No.
Okay. So you can go to the back copies and have a look at how it's developing, and you'll see in there that we sometimes ask for specific things, and we sometimes just give an overview of where we're at now and what's the next step. Yes, Somali.
We've left some leaflets out there,
yeah,
so people can actually see the website.
Yeah, yeah.
And also there are some gift aids and we lost.
Yes. Yeah. And we have other really nice stuff. One of the lovely projects that some volunteers initiated this year was to make Anukampa calendars. So they're really nice. They've got some lovely photographs and some quotes from Ajahn Brahm, which hopefully match the photo. And they're all offered on a donation basis. So these are often produced by people from their own generosity and initiative. So please donate generously and enjoy all of that. So we have that. We have some books that a group made a couple of years ago for Ajahn Brahmani's visit. Some quotes from him and some cards. And I think there'll be some tea too. So I don't want to keep you for ages and ages. So maybe unless there's anything else, maybe one more, we should go for tea. Yes?
How's your health?
Oh yeah, it's getting a bit better.
Good.
Yeah. Thanks to this project, I've been able to be sponsored to have some, what do you call it? Nutritional therapy.
Yeah, because you were just...
And it's not just food, but it's medicine. So yes, it's healing a little bit. And yeah. Yeah, I feel better. Yeah, thanks. Yes, Matt.
Will there be time today, or maybe tomorrow, or tomorrow after tomorrow, to be somewhere and talk about this retreat in Poland? Because think it's seriously manageable, because we have so much people who would be interested.
Okay.
For example, like Anton Sujato, when he came to Poland for retreat, the first day, all places were taken.
Wow. Okay.
So
cool.
I wanted to register first day and there wasn't a single place and I have to go to Slovakia to register it. So a lot of like interested people in meditating with monastics. So it would be really no problem.
Yeah.
We have a lot of spots and so, but I would just like to discuss on how to make it real because.
Yeah.
Like more for a private talk, so.
Okay, yeah. I mean, maybe email me first.
Okay, if you wish.
So we can, I mean, if you want to talk, we can talk, but probably in about 2 weeks. Actually, I've told everybody that, so I'm going to be late.
Okay.
Yeah,
no
in the
problem,
next.
We keep them in line.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. Shall we have tea and a casual chat? And I'm sure we'll probably... What do you think? We can be around another half hour and signing and stuff like that. Yeah? So thank you so much for coming and thank you to Ajahn Brahm. I think you're getting the very best of Dhamma.
Yeah.
You want to say goodbye?
Yeah. Sadhu.
And also, before you all go, you look so beautiful, Dina. Would anybody mind if I took a photo and used it on the website? If anybody does mind, maybe you could, not be in the photo. Is that okay? No, you should be being Sadhu. Could you do that for me? Great. And
I'll
you could
started.
Take one of Moon Ajahn at the end doing the same.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
1, 2, 3.
Give it everything you've got.
Sadhu. Sadhu. Big one. Sadhu.
Is that it? You play one of me and Ajahn. Will we fit?
Yeah.
That was all recorded.
Oh my goodness.